You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 179 of the Talking Chop Podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland. It's Sunday night, a little bit, I guess, later than normal, but not crazy late, and a lot happened this week, and joining me to chronicle all of it is Scott Coleman. What's up, man?
Yeah, for being, past the trade deadline and kind of in the dog days of August, usually the weeks get a little bit quieter, and it's more just game-focused and preparing for the playoffs, but it was a pretty busy week, all things considered.
Certainly, and I promise we both teased this individually on Twitter. We're going to talk about the bullpen. That's going to happen in a little bit here. I promise we did not forget about the bullpen. We're coming back to it. But as Scott noted, there was more news than you would expect in a post-deadline world in August. So we're going to start with that, and we'll come back to the gameplay and the bullpen and how ugly things got at times this week, and I guess the long national nightmare that continues with that unit. But we'll come back to that in a second. First things first, this happened like almost seven full days ago, but we have to talk about it because we did not talk about this last week because it hit on Monday morning. Kevin Gausman is no longer on this roster. He was claimed by the Reds. No one even knew he was placed on waivers. Now, that wasn't that weird, but the timing of it was so bizarre because it was Monday morning after the deadline and all that fun stuff, and none of the beat guys were really talking about it, and it was just like, all right, what's going to happen with Gausman? We talked about him plenty with Eric last week on the podcast, and then in an instant, he was gone, and, you know, it saves the Braves some money. He well-documented he was not very good this season, but what was your reaction to that? Now, I know it was 6 days ago, but it was just kind of strange. Like, nothing was crazy about it necessarily, and that, you know, moving on from him made some sense given the money and the fact that he just kind of had nowhere to go. But what'd you make of Gausman and just kind of saying goodbye to him?
Yeah, as you said, there was really nowhere for Gausman to go. He's not a guy who you're going to send to the minor leagues, especially since he's been around for 5 or 6 years. Clearly the start, you know, he had that great start in his after coming up from the IL stint against Washington, and everyone thought, okay, maybe he's fixed. And then he got pounded by the Phillies, and then pounded by the Reds. And then you start to look back on that national start, which at the time looked pretty good, but then you think there were like four home runs or four balls that were like 2 feet from being home runs, which started to seem a little more fluky than good pitching at that point. So I was surprised. I did a double take whenever I saw the report come through. For the Braves, after taking on some significant money in the trade deadline, I'm sure they weren't hating the idea of getting out of his contract for the $3 million that you mentioned. Somebody who, as a guy in the final year of arbitration next year, was almost a certainty to be non-tendered by the Braves. They weren't going to pay him 10 or 11 million bucks for the uncertainty that he would have brought. Going back a year, the trade, obviously the Braves didn't give up very much. They did take on a contract in Darren O'Day that really helped limit the prospect cost. So it's not like they gave up one of their top guys for an inconsistent 1 year of him before cutting him loose. But ultimately something that, you know, at the time, I think most people liked the move. They thought he would benefit from a change of scenery out of Baltimore, and it just didn't work out for whatever reason.
Yeah, it obviously didn't. I mean, there were nice moments last season, particularly. He had some really nice moments. But you know, after that, kind of this year was disappointing to say the least. And yeah, like you said, the trade was not a disaster. They didn't really give up very much in the deal, which makes it a little bit easier to swallow. We talked about this last week on the podcast, but really briefly, I guess Gausman could have been ticketed for a bullpen role. I guess that's what he's going to do in Cincinnati. But because he's right-handed, there really was nowhere to put him. And, you know, Snicker was asked, Anthopoulos was asked about it, and basically they said that. They said, look, you know, there was not a place to put him in the bullpen, and that kind of makes some sense if you, you know, all things considered, moving on from him, giving him another chance to go somewhere else. There's some goodwill nature in that as well, allowing a guy who's a relatively young veteran, I think, you know, he's still in his 20s, to get another shot somewhere else, get some time to pitch, and not just, you know, burying him somewhere. So it's a something that happened, and I have nothing else on it, I guess, for right now.
Yeah. I was more surprised than anything. I was like, wow.
Yeah, I mean, the time, it was just so weird. I mean, it wasn't, once you kind of let it waft over you, it was like, okay, this does make a lot of sense in a lot of ways. It just wasn't an option that I foresaw. So that's, like I said, that's partially on me for not seeing it coming, I guess, but there was just no buzz about him being DFA'd. It was basically, all right, what are you going to do with him? Do you start him? Do you put him in the bullpen? What happens here? And DFA was not really a consideration in my mind. And the fact that he was claimed as well, I was like, all right, that was strange. So, you know, live and you learn, Scott.
Yeah, it's an expensive tryout for the Reds. I mean, $3 million for a guy who's been really bad basically all year.
I guess the theory would be if he's really, really good and they fix him, quote unquote, then maybe they want to tender him. But even like you mentioned, his tender's not going to be cheap. Like he's gonna be. I can't imagine them tendering him. It's just kind of weird. The whole thing is.
Yeah, and he's a little bit older. I mean, it's not like he's a 24-year-old who someone just cut loose and it's like, okay, well, we liked him or we drafted him.
I mean, he's 28. He's not super old, but still, like, 28's not, as you mentioned,
he's
not,
been around
not
the block. Yeah.
So, yeah, just kind of a strange situation, and I hope he does well. But anyway, we'll leave that there for now, and I doubt, seriously, we'll be discussing Kevin Gausman much more on the podcast. So there you go. Farewell, Kevin. Next on the agenda, a couple of injuries that we have to discuss briefly, one of which was Austin Riley hitting the IL with what was, I guess, announced originally as a knee sprain by the Braves on Wednesday. There was a lot of confusion, including by myself, as to why he wasn't going to play on Wednesday, because they didn't talk about it at all. And they were facing a lefty in an American League ballpark, and he wasn't playing. And I was like, wait, that doesn't make any sense at all. And everyone kind of said that in unison. And then, of course, he was injured a few minutes, I guess, you know, a few hours later, they knew that was going to be the case. And it became an LCL injury. You know, LCL is the, I guess, the best of the CLs in your knee to hurt, but still not great. He's supposedly going to be having a meeting with Dr. James Andrews, who is a very, very well-known doctor, on Monday, which is tomorrow as we're talking now. And apparently he got injured while he was stretching, which is a little bit interesting and strange. You know, in the meantime, they went with a short bench and added a bullpen arm, which I didn't have a huge problem with. It kind of made the bench pretty rough. But alas, you know, Riley to the IL is not ideal. I guess it did make the decision easy to keep Camargo. That was the big decision we talked about last week, was Riley or Camargo when Dansby comes back. Well, Dansby isn't back yet. We'll go to that in a second. But Austin Riley, we'll see on the timetable. It kind of comes down to Monday, and that's a big looming meeting that we're going to not know about after we record this podcast.
Yeah, it's certainly not good. I think last year he missed some time with a knee injury as well. So you worry about a guy who's going to have bad knees, especially when he's younger like he is. Hopefully, you know, the James Andrews meeting, as we've said, you generally don't go to him for him to say, yeah, just put some ice on it for a couple weeks and you'll be good to go. I'm hoping it's not, obviously you hope there's not a surgery, or if it is, it's minimal surgery versus like a total knee reconstruction, which, as you said, the LCL, it's not an ACL.
If that's what it is, it's good news, honestly. Because ACL, MCL are the ones you got to worry about, and LCL, I mean, he's going to be out for a little bit here, but if that's all it is, and that's, I'm sure, what everybody's hoping it is, that's probably pretty good news overall.
Yeah, and even if he does have to have some kind of a cleanup procedure in his knee, or maybe something that might help him down the road, and he has to miss the rest of the year, you know, it's already, what, the second week of August, so it's not like he's going to miss an entire year of his development. No. A guy who, prior to all these injuries happening, really was starting to see his play time decreased, and not that Riley couldn't be a useful piece, or even, you know, should the Braves make the playoffs, I think there was at least somewhat of an argument to be made that Riley should be on there, especially if he started to pick it up a little bit at the plate. But yeah, not good. Anytime you see a young guy go down with an injury, as you said, lifting weights is just a weird way. If he was stretching, that's a weird way to hurt yourself. Maybe it was something that was kind of building up, or an injury that he had been dealing with and hadn't really said anything about, and it finally popped on him. But it's a shame for him. He, of course, was so big that the month and a half after coming up, but I would imagine this effectively ends his 2019.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'm not sure about that just yet, and I know you aren't either. We'll see how that goes, but they have to operate without him, and they have been the last, you know, 3-4 days now since that injury broke. But you know, it's not great. You know, if this is it for Riley, and I'm not sure it's going to be. We'll talk about this next week whenever we have more news. You know, obviously the highs and lows this year. He was awesome for, as you mentioned, about a month and a half, and then kind of brutal after that, which is not a huge surprise for someone who's 22 years old and is a power guy. He was kind of always going to be high ceiling, low floor kind of guy with a bat, I think. And we'll see how that works moving forward. There's lots of discussions to be had that we'll save for the offseason about how they should be treating Josh Donaldson. Riley is, of course, a third baseman by trade. He's been playing in the outfield, and we'll talk more about that in a couple of months. But last thing, Dansby's on the injury front anyway. Dansby Swanson still out, and he's been out for a while now. No timetable as of Saturday. When Snicker was asked about this, the beat guys passed along a quote from Snicker saying, and I'm quoting here, "It hasn't really taken the turn for the better like we wanted," end quote. That's not good, because they need Dansby Swanson pretty badly. You know, Camargo had a couple of nice moments this week. Culberson is what he is, but I think everyone kind of agrees in unison that Swanson is a very, very key piece if you want to go looking forward into September and October. And it's just kind of strange, the mystery right now. Everybody thought he was going to be back already, and now there's no timetable. And that doesn't mean necessarily he's out for a long, long time, but we're definitely into rehab assignment territory now, where it's going to be a little bit, even if he's healthy right away, which he's clearly not yet.
Yeah, you don't necessarily realize how much you're going to miss somebody until you go almost a month without him. And that's where we're at with Dansby right now. The defense especially has really been felt. I mean, I can think of 4 or 5 times off the top of my head where not having Dansby, plays that he makes in his sleep that have come back to hurt the Braves, games that or plays that weren't made that honestly probably were the difference between a win or a loss. I mean, you think about the ball that snuck under Charlie Culberson's glove on Saturday night. Johan Camargo was really bad in that Red series. He allowed at least a couple runs to score that Dansby more times than not is going to make. So defensively is where they've really, really felt the crunch there. And getting him back in the lineup is only going to help, especially with Nomar Kakis. We've seen the last couple days, not that Dansby is an all-world hitter, but he's certainly a pretty good one this year. It would be nice to have him there, because right now it's basically been this week, if the first 4 guys in the lineup didn't do something, you probably weren't going to score a whole bunch. Now, I know like Ender had a good game on Sunday.
He did.
And Johan Camargo had a 3-run homer on Saturday night. But, you know, it's not the most aesthetically pleasing lineup right now after you get past Donaldson. So hopefully he's back sooner rather than later. And it's really just discouraging to hear that the heel is not progressing like they thought.
Even if he were to be healthy like tomorrow, which does not seem to be the case right now, he probably is going to miss a month, because his last game was July 23rd, and you know it's August 11th as we record this now, but they're definitely saying rehab assignment's going to happen now that he's been out so long. So you know, even if it's good news, he's going to miss a whole month, and like you said, it's been a felt absence to be sure. The lineup has been, obviously the top 4 has been just so lights out. Ronald Acuña has been ridiculous, etc. Ozzie too, but you know, right now, this team is being kind of held together, and we'll talk about pitching later on, by the top 4 of the lineup. And they've been awesome, but some depth would be necessarily, if any of those guys cool off, which might happen at some point, at least for stretches, they're going to need some more guys that can hit it. And obviously, his defense is the most important thing at shortstop, a premium position. So get well, Dansby. It's not great news, but not terrible news yet. We'll see how that goes in the future. But wanted to note that we thought he's going to be coming back last week or even longer than that ago. So not great. Last thing before we get to a break, and then we'll get to talk about the bullpen and some game stuff after the break. But Lucas Duda is back, which kind of stuck under the radar. Not a huge move, and that was definitely it's a depth piece and a move in August. It's not going to get a ton of attention, but he was pretty good for the Braves last year in a small sample size. And my first takeaway was, this is for September, basically. Mm-hmm. He also provides some Matt Joyce insurance, I suppose. But Duda is just a power bat that doesn't do really anything else but a good pinch hitting option potentially for you if you get into a bind.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was a guy on the division series roster last year, a left-handed bat, a veteran who's been around. He, as you said, he was good last year for the Braves, really, really bad with the Royals this year. They cut him, though he did hit a go-ahead homer against the Braves, oddly enough, in that short 2-game series where the Braves were swept. But you start to think about even September baseball, when the rosters expand, there's a million pitchers brought in. If all of a sudden you have to burn, you know, you bring on Matt Joyce to pinch hit, the other team brings in a lefty, all of a sudden you burn Joyce and he doesn't even make an impact on the game. Well, you do still have someone like Duda there as a left-handed option should you need him in the later inning. It doesn't hurt. As you said, it's a depth piece. He's somebody who I'd imagine will only get a handful of at-bats moving forward should he ever get called up from Gwinnett. I think he's somebody who will once the rosters expand in September. But ultimately, he's somebody who we probably – this will probably be like the last time we talk about Lucas Duda this year. I could be wrong. Yeah. Maybe he'll surprise us. But a pretty minor, as you said, just more of an August depth piece for a guy who the Braves are familiar with.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll probably see him in September a couple of times in pinch hitting roles. But like you said, it would not be a big surprise if he just never made an impact. But, you know, a career he's definitely a heavy platoon split guy. I looked at his numbers just now. Pretty darn good against right-handed pitching for his entire career and pretty bad against lefties for his entire career. This year is a small sample size, but he has been, you know, absolutely horrible against lefties and, you know, only sort of bad against righties. So the platoon spit holds. We'll see if he's just got nothing left or not. But yeah, I mean, I can't imagine him being on the October roster unless Matt Joyce either gets injured or just falls apart. That's kind of his only role, is the pure lefty bench bat role. He can't play defense at all, really anywhere. I guess maybe first base if you just need him to hit, but he's not going to play at first base in the playoffs unless Freddie Freeman has something happen to him. So all that to say, I kind of like that move because it doesn't cost you anything. It's a minor league contract and we'll see what happens. But, you know, we'll leave that there for now. Okay, Scott, after this short break, we'll come back and talk about the long-awaited bullpen and much, much more.
Ooh.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
We're back, and we had a good laugh during the break about how we talked about the bullpen and just Scott's reaction to that. So, it's been bad. We should say, you know, as bad as some things felt this week, it isn't like the Braves are in a terrible position still. So that's my caveat to soften things a little bit. The Braves still have a 6.5 game lead in the NL East. Their playoff odds are still in great, great shape, mid to high 90%. Stuff. Division odds still in good shape, about, you know, in the 80% range. But man, it was brutal. And you know, things came to a crescendo on Saturday. It's basically, I want to start there because Saturday is the game that everyone will remember this week. Because, you know, 6-2 in the ninth, you just don't lose games like that, especially when you wasted a Soroka performance that was awesome. We mentioned earlier the Camargo home run that gave you a 6-2 lead. It falls apart on you, and you blew a 4-run lead in the ninth inning. That's just like the icing on the cake for what's already a brutal performance from the bullpen. I mean, before we dig in a little bit onto some specifics, kind of where are you at with this? Obviously, everyone's frustrated, but what's your takeaway here on August 11th on this bullpen?
You know, it felt like every ball that was put in play over the last week or so, really since the trade deadline, has gotten past a glove. I mean, I would love to know since the All-Star break, opposing teams are hitting 338 on balls in play. It feels like it's double that. The ninth inning today against Luke Jackson was just kind of the epitome of what they've been dealing with.
Even today, they held on and won today, and Luke didn't give up a run, quote unquote. But man, it was the same thing. Like, just balls going to the wrong spot.
There's a little inside out blooper that, thank God, Acuna has the arm that he does to get the first out, but then you had a ground ball that just barely snuck through. You had a line drive that was about an inch and a half away from being caught by Ozzie. You know, whenever in the final out on Sunday, it was a little blooper to center. And I thought, oh, so help me God if this ball hits the ground, because I think I tweeted like a remote control is going to get broken today if that ball would have dropped. So it was that kind of week. Obviously, these guys are not this bad. I mean, Mark Melanson's been around the league for 10 years now. He is not this bad. Shane Green, yeah, he had some regression coming, and it hit him in a hurry, that's for sure, as we've all seen. But he's not a guy who forgot how to pitch overnight. Chris Martin, other than the homer he gave up to Snow on Monday, hasn't been terrible. I think he's arguably been the best of the bunch. Not that that's saying a whole bunch, but
yes.
Even he hasn't been quite as good as advertised. You know, Luke Jackson's had trouble. Anthony Swarzak has suddenly caught the home run plague. Sean Newcomb had the costly error on Saturday that kind of capped everything off, and then infamously broke a fire extinguisher, which cleared out the clubhouse. Which
let's spend some time on that right now. Actually, yeah. Let's go to that right now. That was quite a news story to unfold, and I guess right away, no one was reporting, or at least knew enough to nail it down that it was Newcomb. And that news came to light a little bit later. But just some of the Twitter stuff that I was seeing about the fire extinguisher, like some of the backstories that were written, it was just kind of one of those moments that you won't forget about this season. Not in the greatest sense, because you just had, you know, I think the worst loss of the year, or at least one of the worst losses of the year, at the very least. You know, blowing it forward in the ninth inning, but Newcomb was the one that finally gave it up for good in the 10th, and I guess he was attributed to that. But just the visual imagery of that, just the fact that it was like ruining the clubhouse after that, and I guess it didn't hurt because they won today. But I mean, it's funny. I couldn't help but laugh. Despite it was probably good for morale, just for us, just because it was a funny subplot to what was a ridiculously bad day at the office. But yeah. I hopefully that was what happened with the Braves too. I honestly haven't seen any of the quotes about, or if there are any quotes about that exact thing. But I hope that was just kind of something that actually lightened the load a little bit. But other than that, it was just kind of a wild scene.
I mean, it was kind of like the perfect ending, right? Like,
yeah, really,
guy's pissed off, he kicks a trash can, and it somehow explodes, which if anyone's ever been around a fire extinguisher exploding or being set off, it's really hard to breathe. So you can imagine like a group of 40 people in a small space trying to get out of and not being able to breathe with a fire extinguisher spewing all over. I mean, I would pay
in a visitor's clubhouse, which is probably not exactly, it's probably not terrible considering it's a pretty new ballpark, but visitor's clubhouses are not as nice as home clubhouses.
No. So it was kind of like the perfect ending to, I mean, that was as bad of a loss as the Braves have had in 2 years. I mean, you think about like the Cubs game and the Red Sox games last year where they completely collapsed.
Those were the two.
And at least with those teams, like, okay, they're really good teams. They're going to be in the playoffs. Red Sox obviously had a historic offense last year, you know, to have a 3-run lead and then have a 4-run lead in the eighth and ninth innings that you couldn't hold against the lowly Marlins, who are probably a bottom three team in baseball this year. You know, give them credit. And like we said a few minutes ago, it seemed like every ball they hit was just under the glove of somebody or just in front of an outfielder. But it was a rough night, to say the least.
Yeah, let's talk about some numbers real quickly, because I agree with you on all these guys not being this bad. Pretty obviously, but you know, the fan base is irate, and I understand why. The irrational nature of it kicks in a little bit to a certain degree, but it's just really really frustrating. I got these numbers that I'm about to read to you from Steven over at MLB Daily Dish. So shout out to Steven. And these numbers are from actually going into today, so they're not updated after today's games. But since the All-Star break, the Braves have a 7.21 bullpen ERA. In 87 innings, that's as bad as you think it is. That is horrific, obviously, and not a small sample size. 87 innings is a lot. And 7.21 ERA is brutal. Third highest BABIP in the major leagues, the worst walk rate in the major leagues, the second worst strikeout percentage in the major leagues, so that's not going to be sustainably good. And then a lot of home runs as well, fifth worst in home run rate over that time. All three of the new acquisitions, not great. You know, 5 runs and 5 appearances for Martin. Melanson had the brutal Saturday, and then Shane Green, 11.25 ERA for Shane Green in a Braves uniform. Granted, it's a small sample size, so whatever. We did, you know, call it to some degree on Shane Green that he was going to cool off, but it happened in a hurry, as you referenced. He's not this bad either, but, you know, I think you had a stat about the 1-2-3 innings from this week and how few of them there were. I mean, we have all these numbers, I guess, all day to read off if we wanted to do that, but the question is, what happens now, because we could tell you how bad they've been. If that everyone could tell you that, but is this going to stabilize? How soon is it going to stabilize? Like, what's the plan? Because I mean, we saw Luke Jackson closing games. It worked on Sunday. But you know, every single person I follow on Twitter, I felt like, was saying, "Oh my God, Luke Jackson's coming in the ninth inning to close the game. You got to be kidding me!" And my response was, "Well, who do you want to close this game?" Because there were guys who weren't available, etc. But what happens now, I guess, is the overarching question here.
You know, it's kind of sound like I'm Brian Snicker here, but I mean, you just have to keep running the guys out there. You can't.
It's your only option.
It is. I mean, truly, and it's such a obvious and basic answer, but I mean, what other options do you have? I mean, you're not gonna, with those three guys you got, you're not gonna bail on any of them after a week and a half. And they got rid of three guys who were completely underperforming with Chad Sobotka. I don't think anyone wants to see any more of Chad Sobotka anytime soon. I mean, I guess Jacob Webb, who is another guy who is probably due for a little bit of regression, but's been pretty good on a results basis this year, could be thrown into the mix. He's coming back from the injury, of course, and Gwinnett. But yeah, you just got to keep sending him out there. I don't know who's going to be the closer moving forward. Let me ask you this. If you had to put $100 on who has the most saves for the Braves from now until the end of the year, who would you pick? Yeah.
I am going to say Melanson.
All right. That's who I was going to pick, too.
But just I'm sure people can hear this. I have no confidence. None. No. I almost said Shane Green, just because, you know, they anointed Shane Green before he threw a pitch. Like, he came out to the media the first day and said, "I'm the closer," because he was told he was the closer. So I know he was ball. I know he's been awful. I think they're going to go back to Shane Green at some point, so maybe he's the right answer. But, I mean, it's one of those two, I think. That's all I was really deciding between. I guess it wouldn't stun me if it was somebody else because of how bad things have been. But those are the two veterans with the most closing experience. And I think, you know, for better or worse, and I'm not advocating for this, but I think Snicker cares about that. I think he's going to want someone who wants to be there in the ninth inning. And those two guys had the experience. That's not me advocating for it, but I think it's going to be between those two guys unless they just cannot do it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that's the smart money. But again, it's not exactly, it's like a couple weeks ago when we talked about who would be your game three starter of a playoff series. And it was like, oh, I don't know who it would be. No,
I mean, I think I know who it is right now.
Julio at this point. Yeah.
I still don't love that, but Julio has overachieved my expectations this year. He's been better than I thought, and we should credit Julio for doing a good job this year. So maybe he is just better than the numbers say he's going to be.
Yeah.
Without getting sidetracked there, I agree with you. There's no magic potion. You know, we were pretty high on the bullpen moves, and I liked all those trades. I still do. I think.
Sure. Me too.
It's brutal now because it's 2 weeks later, and it's not gone well. But like you said, like I said, these three guys are better than this. Bullpen stuff is just volatile. I mean, we saw this coming a mile away all season long, that the bullpen was going to be the biggest problem. We talked about it ad nauseum for months and months. It's true, but now, on paper, it shouldn't be so bad. It just happens to be that the three guys that they brought in to right the ship are struggling. And the timing of that is brutal. But, you know, all that said, they won some games this week where they had bad bullpen performances. Like Tuesday, the bullpen was terrible. They won that game by four runs because it was 11-0 in the sixth. So I guess they had some room for error in that game. And even today, I mean, there was, you know, it wasn't like there was a terrible. It feels like it was such a bad week for the Braves, and they went 4-3.
Yeah, and I think if a week ago you would have said, yeah, three games in Minnesota against just a loaded Twins lineup.
We did say, Eric and I said that exact thing last week on this podcast. In this same space, we said 4-3 is a win, and it was.
Yep, crossed 7 days off the calendar, and you keep the lead, as we said, 6.5-game lead on the Nationals, 8-game lead on the Mets. We'll see how the Phillies do tonight, but either an 8 or 9-game lead. I mean, it's all about crossing days off the calendar and getting closer and closer, and they've done that, bullpen flaws and all. It's kind of amazing. A couple people were talking today. It's like, imagine if the Braves had like one of the better bullpens. I mean, they're 20 games above 500 right now in a good competitive division with four teams, at least three games or better above 500. You have a really good Nationals team, a red hot Mets team, a solid Phillies team, and they're 20 games above 500 and they have the worst bullpen in baseball. Isn't that just kind of crazy?
I mean, Yeah, they've been truly awful. And again, I don't think that right now, true talent wise, that they have the worst bullpen in baseball. I don't believe that at all. But the numbers for the season and the numbers, especially recently, tell that story. So I mean, it's worth saying. We said it before, but it's worth saying how crazy it is that this team has this record with this bullpen, and with Keuchel not being great, and with Folty being what Folty's been this year. All with Gausman being what Gausman was this year, for them to be this good is kind of insane, record-wise, win-loss record-wise. So, yeah, I'm with you, though. I mean, the bullpen, we don't think it's going to be this bad, but the fact that it is this bad, at least to this point in time, and they've still been this good, is remarkable, I would say. That's a good way to put it.
I think that's the word for it, because, you know, again, it's not like this team is floundering in the wild card race right now because they keep blowing games and they can't figure it out. I mean, this has been a good team really since, you know, middle of May. And
before that, honestly, I mean, they had a really bad like opening weekend, mm-hmm. and they've been good, like flat out good ever since, basically.
Yeah,
I mean, they kicked it out of high gear at one point, but yeah, it's. Yeah.
They started 18-20, and they're 70-50 now. So quick math, that's 52-20 since the middle of May.
That's
no,
good.
52-30.
Yeah, still pretty good, by the way.
Yeah, pretty good.
But no, it's a point we talked about a million times, but yeah, it's true. They've been really good, and I found it striking when I was doing prep for the podcast. I was just in my mind thinking, man, what a brutal week. What a down podcast this is going to be. And they went 4-3 on the road. It's like, okay. It's kind of a microcosm for the season, though, because I'm not sure this feels like a team that's in the spot that they're in at the moment. But you look at the standings, and they're right there. I was going to ask you for some more takeaways from this week. One that I want to ask you about specifically, there's now some worry about Dallas Keuchel that I'm seeing. I understand why, because the numbers are not great. You know, a FIP of 5.22, ERA about 4.8 or so. He was brutal this week in his one start. Are you worried about Dallas Keuchel? Because we've penciled him in a few different times as the number two starter in the playoffs. And at the moment, he is not pitching like that guy. So,
yeah,
it's a small sample. It's 10 starts after the late arrival. But worried at all about Dallas Keuchel? Because if he's not good, man, whew.
I don't really know how to answer this question, because I wrote something similar earlier this week. It's like you look at his numbers and he's been really bad, a 4.83 ERA, a FIP of 5.22, and that's over 10 starts now, almost 60 innings. And you think, God, those numbers are terrible. I mean, that's more or less what like Julio Teheran was last year, and we know how much we bashed Julio. But when you watch him pitch, and obviously the numbers were inflated a bit with that bad start that you mentioned, it doesn't seem like he's a guy who's basically been a 5 ERA pitcher this year. It just doesn't feel that way. Now, maybe that's recency bias, or maybe that's just wanting to think highly of a guy who everyone was excited about adding in the middle of June. But on a results basis, he's been just as bad as some of those guys we mentioned the Braves got nothing out of. So I don't really know how I feel about him. Other than the Marlins start, he's generally gotten hurt later in games, like third time through the order. Seems like he's always in trouble in that last inning. And lately, the reason the ERA is up and the FIP is up is because he hasn't been able to escape that sixth or seventh inning jam. And a couple times he's left games and the bullpen has allowed his runners to score, which hurts his numbers, of course. But again, when you watch him pitch, it's like, all right, well, he's throw strikes. The strikeout numbers aren't great, but we knew the strikeout numbers weren't going to be great. He's striking out actually about guys at the same rate that he did last year. The walks are basically the same. Where he's getting killed are the home runs. And maybe that's a product of his environment. Maybe it's a little bit of a fluke. His xFIP is actually 4.02, which is encouraging. It seems like every ball that gets hit in the air against him has been a homer. So I guess if you're looking for some reason to be encouraged about Keuchel is if the home run rate comes back down to earth a little bit, and he has a career 0.91 home run per nine. So it's not like he's had a home run problem for years and years. But at the end of the day, you have to perform and you have to get good results. And he has not been very good over his last four or five starts. So that's kind of where I feel on Keuchel. I don't know. I don't know if worried is the right word for him, but I think everybody, himself included, are ready to see the results that closer to the guy he was in Houston than what he's been with the Braves.
Yeah, I mean, when they signed him, I was encouraged by the signing, but we did, I think, appropriately question the upside a bit. It was definitely more of a get a solid guy to eat some innings and be like a third starter kind of type. He's been worse than that so far. But I don't think that, you know, just to say this on the record, the Cy Young guy is not coming back. That's not going to be a likely outcome. So I think you're hoping he's your number two starter, but that's because of the lack of options. Like, ideally, he would be your third or fourth starter on a team like this, even if he's pitching well. You know, Fulte would be the guy who's the X factor there, because I think, with all respect to Julio, who, again, has been good this season, I don't think you want him in that number two role either. I think Soroka and, I mean, Freed and Fulte are the guys with the upside, in my opinion, to be what you want a number two starter to be in the playoffs. We'll see how that looks. Lots of twists and turns along the way. Fulte had some moments this week. He was really good on Tuesday, by the way. Fulte Nevich was with basically five innings of greatness Tuesday, and then kind of fell apart a little bit in the sixth, and was, you know, not awful today, I guess. So, some nice moments for him.
Yeah, he settled in nicely after the first inning today.
And by the way, the wristband thing that he's wearing was a popular topic this week. That was funny to watch and comment on. I'm not sure if you have thoughts, but I really, really, really enjoyed all the discourse around
Don't
that.
Don't be a little bitch.
Yeah, expletive warning, I suppose, everyone. But I tried to tee you up with the reference to the wristband first, so people could fast forward if they had kids. But hey, that was funny. I really enjoyed that, actually, from Fulte. So I wanted to get it in there a little bit. I don't know, man. That's probably all I have in terms of just like specific stuff from this week. Did anything take away from you? I mean, Camargo hitting a home run, we referenced quickly earlier, was nice to see, just him doing something good. And Ender had a big swing today that helped them win that game. But other than that, I don't really have... Oh, I have one thing that I just remembered. If you're the person that's arguing on behalf of Craig Kimbrel right now, you've lost your mind. Because Kimbrel's been terrible. And people are like, oh, what if they had signed Kimbrel, it'd be fixed. I'm like, A, Kimbrel's been really bad. And B, Kimbrel is one human.
He's hurt, too.
Yeah, he had the knee problem, and one person.
Well, in the knee problem, which apparently teams kind of knew about, that his knee was bugging him, and that was part of the concern last offseason, was that they didn't know what the knee was in terms of health. I heard a little bit of that today, too. I was like, what are you guys talking about?
I saw things I was baffled by. Not that, obviously, Craig Kimbrel is, you know, true talent-wise, would be better than all the guys that they signed. But Craig Kimbrel, in 14 appearances this season, has a 5.68 ERA. He has a career worst walk rate since he was basically a rookie in Atlanta. His FIP is 6.76, negative 0.4 Fangraphs WAR this season. Like, he's been truly terrible, and now he's hurt. And it's like, wait, people are talking about him as like some bullpen savior? I don't get it. I really don't.
Well, and he signed a 3-year deal too, so they have him for another.
They were never going to do that. It wasn't going to happen.
And maybe Craig figures it out, and maybe, you know, people are like, well, if he was with the Braves instead of the Cubs, they would know him better.
He might be awesome still. Like, I'm not saying he's going to be bad forever, but like, to use that argument right now, it's like, what are you talking about?
Especially after the struggles he had in the second half of last year in the playoffs, where, I mean, the Red Sox were kind of going to him out of desperation, but everybody in baseball knew Craig is not the same guy from 4 or 5 years ago, where he came in, and even if you put a ball in play against him, you felt good about yourself.
Yeah, I'm looking at his Fangraphs page right now and just hearkening back to his first 4.5 years with the Braves, when he was just ridiculous. If you ever want to just observe some madness and pitching stats, go look at that from 2010-2014. Craig Kimbrel in Atlanta was quite a show. Okay, want to get that off my chest real quickly. Okay, last thing. Let's look ahead to the week a little bit. They play the Mets. They have Monday off, and then they go home games against New York and Los Angeles. Obviously, the Dodgers are very good, and that's a showdown over the weekend that'll be heavily dissected across the country, I would imagine. But the Mets are a huge story right now. In fact, we took some blame, apparently, Scott. I got some tweets about this. 2 weeks ago, you and I kind of buried the Mets on this podcast, and then they rattled off 15 wins in 17 games. Actually, 15 and 16. They lost today, so 15 and 17 now, but it was 15 out of 16, including some memorable comebacks. They had a big comeback win over the Nationals. Was that yesterday? I think it was yesterday, or maybe Friday. Yeah. They've been ridiculous, and now they're back with an 8. Like, not that they're a big threat to the Braves necessarily at the moment, but the Mets are no longer playing terribly. They've been playing great for 3 weeks now, and that's not great timing as they arrive. You know, we'll see. That's always a rivalry. But for me, I'm looking ahead of the Dodgers series, but I can't – I guess we shouldn't poo-poo the Mets now with the way they're playing.
No, I mean, they – to the Mets' credit, they beat up on bad teams. I mean, they had a stretch where they played, like, the Pirates twice, the Padres, who were really struggling in the second half, the Marlins, they swept. Now, you know, as we saw this weekend with Atlanta, it's not automatic wins. It's not like you just show up and play the Marlins and win. You have to beat the teams that you're playing. But, yeah, credit to the Mets. They've gotten – I think they're more in the wild card picture. I know we're going to get crap for this whenever they beat the Braves inevitably on Tuesday night. But, like,
yes.
They're still – even with this crazy, crazy run, what did you say, 15 out of 17 or something like that?
Yeah, that's right.
They're still 8 games back, which –
538 has their division winner odds at 4% right now.
Yeah.
Just keep that in mind. They're 8 games back. Listen, they've been really good, but the most important thing is they've been winning like pretty unsustainably and also against bad teams. So shouts to them for putting that together and making a little run here. It's been kind of fun actually to watch, even though I don't like the Mets.
Yeah, them beating the Nationals 2 out of 3 helped. I mean, that's kind of what we were rooting for.
The Saturday comeback was a wild one.
They
were down, what, 3 or 4? It was basically what the Marlins
were. Yeah, they were down 3 against Doolittle, too, who's been basically perfect this year. Yeah.
You referenced something about the Marlins. We should say, I think we do a pretty good job of this to just like keep expectations manageable. I saw some reactions talking about how, quote, embarrassing it was to get to split with the Marlins. This is baseball. I know they're really, really bad teams, but you can't expect to beat a team every single time to go out there, as we saw today with the Orioles beating Justin Verlander as like -450 favorites the Astros were. It's baseball, man. Like, if you win a series, that's great. It's not great to split with the Marlins, but the notion that it's – I saw a lot of the word embarrassing, and I was like, guys, this is a – I mean, Saturday was embarrassing because it was just such a brutal, brutal performance. But, like, Thursday, losing to the Marlins –
it happens.
You know, it's a baseball game. Like, you should win because you're better than them. But out of 10 games against the Marlins, you should win 7.
Well, and they're 12-4 so far against them.
That's good. I mean, you can't ask for more than that. You just can't. I mean, again, like, if you told me to pick let's start a 10 game series right now, neutral site, Braves Marlins. How many games do the Braves win?
Yeah, I'd probably pick
7 or 8. Like, you're going to lose sometimes. It's just what it is.
Yeah.
And by the way, they could easily, in a 10-game series, split or go 4-6. Like, it's baseball. So I want to put that out there because that was – I thought the greatest acknowledgement of that kind of theme was the Orioles game today. But the Marlins splitting with the Braves is also a pretty good one as well. The Dodgers series looms. They're the team that everyone compares the Braves to, including us, because the Dodgers are the best team in the National League. They just are. So – some pretty fun matchups scheduled. Soroka and Kenta Maeda on Friday at home in Atlanta should be rocking. Saturday, Folty and Hyunjin Ryu, who might be a Cy Young favorite this year, and then Max Fried, Clayton Kershaw in a battle of left-handers with curveballs on Sunday.
Yeah.
So, and that's a national TV game on TBS. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how well it's going to go for the Braves, but you know. It's same thing in reverse here. The Dodgers are better than the Braves, in my opinion, but it's baseball. You can go out and sweep the Dodgers. It wouldn't stun me.
It would be nice to finally – I mean, again, it's not the playoffs. It doesn't really matter. It's 3 games out of 162. But it would be nice to kind of shake some of the yips the Braves have had against the Dodgers. Like, the last 3 years, it seems like the game starts and the Braves are already losing 3-0. I mean, even the playoffs last year, especially those first 2 games, it was like, holy cow. This game is over, and
it was immediately over. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, again, it's you do have the pitchers you want. Folty against the Dodgers lineup kind of terrifies me a little bit, but you do have Soroka and you have Fried, and the Dodgers don't hit lefties nearly as well as they hit righties, which is encouraging. The Braves do miss Walker Buehler in that series, which is great because he's been like unhittable lately. And against the Mets, I know we've kind of shifted gears, but they won't see Jacob deGrom, who seemingly makes every single start against the Braves, and they won't see Syndergaard either, who pitched today, or yesterday. So, you know, Mats, Wheeler, and Stroman. Marcus Stroman is not a walk in the park by any means, but it is nice to miss, if you're going to miss 3 guys in a week, to miss deGrom, Buehler, and Syndergaard is certainly a break.
That is a break, and I'm glad you said that. Even, you know, the Dodgers just have so many guys that it doesn't even feel like a break, but you still miss some guys this week. That's important. since I do this every week, I feel like last week I said 4-3 would be a good result. I think 4-3 would be a great result this week. Even at sorry, 3-3. I think 4-2. Yep. Sorry, 4-2 would be a great result. I think 3-3 would be just fine. I know you're at home and you want to win more than you lose, but when the Dodgers are involved, I think 3-3 would be just fine. 4-2 would be a blessing. You feel the same way?
Yeah, absolutely. And especially if they could take 2 out of 3 from both and kind of split it up a little bit, that'd be really nice to finally beat the Dodgers. I mean, again, these are professional athletes. They don't probably look at other teams in awe like the way we do. No. But it would be great to win 2 out of 3 on the chance that we see these guys down the road. One other thing that is worth that I realize, this is the start of a 9-game homestand over 11 days, which is really nice because it feels like, I don't know about you, but it feels like the Braves have been on the road the entire second half so far.
It does feel that way. They've played 57 games at home and 63 on the road, so this is going to even out a little bit of that disparity. By the way, I know we talk about the Dodgers a lot. The Dodgers are 79-41, which is speaks for itself. 538 projects them to win 105 games.
Oof. Sounds right.
That's kind of all I need to say about that. Like, they're really tough. Good. They are the only team in the National League with a 3-digit run differential. They are plus 192. Second place Jesus in the National Christ. League is plus 77. So, and the Braves are, I believe, third or fourth. Yeah, fourth right now. Plus 62. So, they're really good. We'll see what happens. But the Braves are in great shape in the National League East still, despite the pain and frustration of this week. Still went 4-3, and all they got to do is go 4-3 every game the rest of the way, every week the rest of the way. Just if they play 500 baseball the rest of the way, they're probably gonna make the playoffs, and probably gonna win the division. So just take care of business, do what you're supposed to do. There's 42 games left on the schedule. 21-21 will get you to 91 wins, which I think wins the National League East. I'm not going to guarantee it, but I think that probably wins the National League East, and I think they're better than that. So just play the way they've been playing all year, and it'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm with you. As we talked about, it doesn't necessarily feel like this team is 20 games above 500, but at the end of the day,
they are.
All wins are the same. Whether you win by 15 runs or you pull all your hair out, or what's left of your hair in my case, and watch.
You're a young man, Scott. And come on.
Watch the bullpen. I was on the wrong side of the hair genes. Whether you're watching the bullpen slowly but surely blow the game and to win by 1, or you win by 15, at the end of the day, it's a win, and that's all that really matters.
This is a team on pace for 94 and about 94 and a half wins at their current rate. And that's a very good baseball team. So it may not feel like it every day, but just remind yourself, 94 win pace right now. And it's much, much better than that since, as Scott noted earlier in the podcast, since mid-May, they're like 100 win pace or better. So they've been awesome. And even this week, again, 4-3. I'm telling myself as much as I'm telling everybody else, 4-3 this week, despite all the faux pas. That's a pretty good result. Scott, anything else you want to get out there before we sign off today?
I thought the Ronald Acuna stuff, for him to be maybe the fifth player ever to have a 40-40 season, I hope baseball promotes him, and just the rarity and how hard it is to not only hit 40 homers or steal 40 bases, but for somebody to do both of them. And he's been running like somebody who wants to steal 40 bases this year. And obviously he had 4 homers in 4 games against Miami.
Four runs this week, I think. And 33 homers, 28 steals right now for Ronald Acuna on August 11th is, woo, he's very good.
And you know, if it gets to be like the last week of the season, that anytime he's on base, you know, he's going. Like it could be whether it's like 0-0 in the first inning, or it's the 12th inning, or it's the 6th inning and they're down by 10. You know he's going to be taken off because he's not dumb. Players aren't dumb. They know what the historical significance of stuff is, and a 40-40 season for him at age 21 would be pretty insane.
This is an estimation because he homered again today, but coming into today, he was tied for 8th overall in Major League Baseball in Fangraphs WAR, and he homered today. I think he might be 7th by himself now.
Yeah.
He's 21 years old, Scott.
And 10 more years of a man. He's
21 years old. Just for the record, he has a better WRC+ and more Fangraphs WAR than Mookie Betts, Chris Bryant, Javier Baez, all of which are very much more famous than he is at this point in time. Some other names, Nolan Arenado. He is beating Freddie in WAR, not in WRC Plus, but yeah, he's really good. I mean, I feel like we talk about Ronald every week, but that's okay because he's been doing things to make us talk about him. You know, 33 homers, and I think he had 4 or 5 this week, at least 4. Yeah. What are you going to say? If the fact that he's running, I'm looking at the FanGraphs leaderboard page. He's the only guy in the top, I'm looking now, 30, maybe more, with 25 or more stolen bases this year. Like, stolen bases are kind of not a thing anymore. Most guys don't run a ton. They're way down from where they used to be. Yeah, he's the only guy in the top 50 with more than 23 steals.
Yeah.
Christian Yelich has 23, and Yelich is obviously the reigning MVP, who is incredible. He's even better than Ronald Acuña is, but he's also like a fully formed baseball player, and Ronald is 21. So.
Yeah, it's pretty. Yeah, I mean, like, I know that it's starting to slowly but surely pick up a little bit of national attention that he has a chance at 40-40, especially the way he's been hitting lately. Like every night it's going to be must-see TV. If he gets within, you know, a couple of them, you want to be there the night that he has his 40-40 season. And I think he'll get there again. The nice thing
if he stays healthy, the homers are probably like an 80% thing if he stays healthy.
Yeah. Easy. Yeah. You tell me he's not going to hit 7 more over the next, I mean, that's like 1 a week at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. The steals, you know, you got to get on base. You got to steal. You don't want him just running to run. And sometimes it really doesn't make much sense to steal a base. But if the last 2 weeks get there and he's at like 36 steals, I would imagine he's running every single time he gets on base.
Let the young man run, Brian Snicker. Let the young man run. All right, I'm glad you said that, Scott. That's a good way to end it on a high note because Ronnie's always fun to talk about. Anything you got coming on the site or otherwise?
Not too much. My real life job has been pretty nutty the last couple weeks, so I'm still trying to get caught up on stuff. but no, as always, just check out the site. Minor league seasons are starting to wrap up here in the next few weeks, and the minor league guys do such a great job. So check that out. And as always, on the Twitter machine, Scott Coleman 55.
Yep, check out the Road to Atlanta podcast on this same feed, as well as all of our written content over at TalkingChop.com. That is TalkingChop.com. Tell a friend, please subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you want to, or multiple platforms. Click the download button as many times as you want to. Listen to, but download, that really helps us. And thank you, Scott, for joining me. We'll see everybody next week.
Support for this show comes from Fundrise. Buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise Flagship Fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its $1 billion real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio in just minutes and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/fox. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise Flagship Fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.
More to-dos, less time, and an infinite number of tools to keep track of. Sometimes doing business has never felt harder, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You can just use HubSpot because their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: high-quality leads, fast closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle, it's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.